For May the 14th, 2021, we talk about Resident Evil Village, Unrailed, and we ask you about games that are not more than the sum of their parts. Welcome to Level 371. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, David.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah. What's going on, bud?
So not a whole lot. Something I'm going to be talking about for the grind is I went full nerd this past weekend and attended a LARP event. And ooh. So most of my life recently has been like preparing for that. So yeah, that's kind of been my thing recently.
Neat. Did this involve like a lot of outdoor time?
Yeah, a lot of camping, in preparation, a lot of sewing.
Okay.
So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So you went full on like costume and stuff too. Nice.
I want to do a LARP that is not like Fantasy Woods themed, but is like grungy dystopian city themed.
That was what happens literally right after we left. The next group was a group called Aftermath. That is that.
What?
Dennis, if you just want to visit Seattle, you can ask me. You don't have to drop clues.
That's what I'm saying. Just pick a city, do it, and just see how long it goes before the locals realize that you are out of place.
Yeah, just do a shadow run LARP, just break into a whole bunch of banks and stuff.
I mean, to be fair, we just had a shadow run LARP, and now we're going to have $3 gas.
We did just have a shadow run LARP, yeah. But they said they were sorry. So yeah, what right. A weird story. Cool. Yeah. Do you have a sewing machine, David?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. I tried my hand at sewing a mask, and it's kind of like whenever Homer Simpson tries to make something, you know, like, mm-hmm. just look at my spice rack. And it's just two pieces of wood like nailed together. It was pretty much just like that. And I was like, my mom's sewing machine has kind of been in the family for a while, so I'm not going to touch that. I think I'm just going to wait and buy a mask. Sure. When they're available. Sure. This was back at the beginning of the pandemic when there were just no masks at all,
shirt days. Yeah
And, you know, the bad old bandana days. Nice. What you been up to, Ben?
Oh, a lot of work in the past week, but then also a vacation on the horizon, so yeah.
Neat. Do you know what you're gonna do, or is the vacation right now just defined as not work?
I am going down to Portland for a week for one of my friend's weddings.
Cool.
So it'll be a nice break.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dennis, how about you?
I fucked up, you guys.
What?
I did. Uh-oh. I did a real bad.
What'd you do?
Last night.
Should I stop recording?
No. I'm at peace with it. Luke lost a tooth yesterday.
Oh.
Big exciting event. Packed it away. Ow. Under his pillow, and the tooth fairy neglected their duties.
Oh no.
So he burst into our room first thing this morning, very distraught.
Oh no.
And he had made a path of toys on his bed leading to the tooth. Like, he had decorated for the tooth fairy.
Right.
And we just spaced on going in there.
Hey, if any kids are listening, can you go out of the room?
Yeah.
Okay. So what was the story that you said, and also who specifically messed up?
The unclear. We share those responsibilities.
Okay. Okay.
The parents.
Dennis is a good husband, by the way. Or he's a bad husband, and it was completely his responsibility.
That is
one of two possibilities. No, so we were asked, oh, wait, you got to be surprised too, right? Like, what happened? What do you think? And he's like, yeah, I made a path of toys, and the tooth cap was under, he put it under a hat, I guess.
Okay.
And we're like, oh, you know, that's probably what gotcha right there was the hat. That's very confusing for tooth fairies.
Yeah. The tooth fairy doesn't fail you. You fail the tooth fairy.
Right. Well, that's kind of how we spun it. We just used nicer words, and that seemed pretty effective. So.
Okay. What was this his first tooth that he lost?
Oh no. I don't feel too bad because we're on like five or six.
Gotcha. Okay.
Like things are dropping like flies. But he does have the very cute right now, the two front teeth missing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Going on. So he constantly is sticking his tongue out through the teeth.
Yeah,
he's very, very excited about that.
God, I just remember that being so painful.
Oh, losing a tooth?
Yeah, or just having a tooth that was loose, you know?
You'd get it like twisted in a certain way that was like stabbing into you, but you couldn't untwist it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go the way I went and just like, I lost a couple of my tooth, baby teeth, but most of them had to be pulled.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
So, yeah, between four wisdom teeth, two adult teeth that just weren't fit, and a bunch of baby teeth, I've had 15 teeth pulled.
Oh,
my God.
Damn. Yeah, so I'm so sorry.
Is Luke going to get $2 then tonight instead of one?
We might have to add some apology money in there. You can't seem too guilty about it, otherwise he's going to start asking questions, but he probably does deserve some, like, you know, thank you for your continued business, we hope your next experience is better.
Going my cookie
probably. Yeah. Well, yeah,
wow. Going like full, yeah, the tooth fairy works for a corporation and has a PR department.
It's just a job, man.
We hear you, we're listening.
it's like recycling. It was set up as this big great thing, but really it's not functioning the way it's supposed to, and you have to pay them to keep the thing going.
Mm-hmm. It's like recycling. There's a country that you just send all the teeth to, and then when the country that you send the teeth to says no more, you have to scramble and find someplace else to send the teeth.
You make a teeth island in the ocean.
Just a big gyre of molars.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. I think I played that Mario level.
Oh. I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure I've seen this on Hex Crank.
Oh man. I don't have too much going on. I've not been feeling too well. I like lost my voice over the weekend and stuff, so just puttering around the house and all of that. But I did manage to play and beat Resident Evil Village. So
holy shit,
yeah, nice. It's an 8-hour game. Like,
hey Cole, can you send me Resident Evil Village and your PS5? That's not an honest request.
Okay. I'd be happy to send you the game. It's the PS5 that's the problem.
Do you
get a physical copy then?
What's that?
I was just, the punchline was I wanted Cole to ship me his PS5, but no.
I'm just throwing it out because it's, you know, just an eternally true statement I'm writing down right now for titles. It's the PS5 that's the problem. You know, at any point since its launch, you could have said that, and it would have been an accurate statement.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm copying from a Reddit post, but on PlayStation's website, it says, play has no limits, like, except capacity of PS5.
Except stock, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no, I also like shipping a PS5. Dear God, I think it'd be easier to ship myself.
I will fly and drop it off.
No, just gonna get one of those big crates that says fragile on it. Drill a couple air holes, you know?
Actually, I need to track down. There's a story recently about a guy who did that.
Did he die in a distribution center?
No, he almost died, but did actually make it back.
Huh. Well, lesson,
you know,
learned.
They say almost dead is saved a couple bucks.
Yep. Yeah, it was like he went to, was doing some sort of, like, it wasn't Peace Corps, but like something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up in, like, I don't know, Australia or somewhere, and just got crazy, crazy homesick.
Okay.
And so tried to mail himself back to like the UK or somewhere.
Huh.
Oh, it was, and transatlantic. Yike.
It was something like that, and then they actually shipped the package by mistake to like New York or something. Like, it was a whole thing.
So he would have died if the plane had gone across the ocean.
I'm not sure. I'll have to try to.
Oh, man. Oh, well, so yeah. But that's what I did. And I'm kind of impatient to talk about it. So I think that we should do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
To be fair, if you're impatient to talk about it, we should not do the regular type of show, because that means we're going to segue all over the place and, like, roundabout get there.
Yeah, I feel like we should do the better type of show.
I mean, I want to let you guys talk about your games, too. Oh, you delayed it anyway. No. Why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm going to ask the assembled quorum here. I would have gotten permission from Jala in writing if I thought to ask about this before. Is it okay if I break the usual practice of having the person who was not here last week go first? David, are you okay with this?
I am okay with that.
Okay. Yeah, I want to talk about Resident Evil 8, also known as Resident Evil Village. So I'm just going to say right now, it's good. It's good, guys. I played it. I beat it. It's good. But I want to lead by asking you guys what you want to know about it, because I could just start gushing, but I'd rather answer your questions.
As someone who liked Resident Evil, 4 through 6 and doesn't like Amnesia, is it a game I should play?
Yes, there is a tremendous amount of variety here. This is closer to Resident Evil 4 than Amnesia, you know, or even like Resident Evil 7, which had those, you know, kind of prominent pursuit based things, especially early on, kind of in the first of the major dungeons that you go to with Jack Baker kind of chasing you around. There is some of that here. But like the village that you're in acts as kind of a hub world. And what you are doing is you are going after kind of the four lords who like run the village and do experiments on people. And each of those four lords kind of has a different style of play that's associated with them. The first one that you go do is the one with Lady Dimitrescu, the tall vampire lady. But that's only like the first couple hours of the game. It is its own Resident Evil dungeon that, you know, kind of mimics the puzzle box spaces kind of thing that older RE games do. And there's a little bit of having her chase you around and you're disempowered about it. But that is a very small portion of what's going on here. It does a lot of switching back and forth between things. Like there's some escape room stuff. There's a lot of gunplay. In this, I think that if you like a more action-based game, they have moved away from RE7's. I mean, RE7 is good and scary, but like the combat was not necessarily a thing that was tactically interesting. This has a good amount of encounter design, enemy variety, and neat arenas that you can go through. And like really good boss fights. They've upped the boss fight game as well. So I would say, yeah, if RE7 scared you off because it was more, you know, kind of closer to a, you know, Amnesia, Outlast, PT kind of thing. Yeah, This is still first person, but it is kind of playing in some more familiar spaces and very kind of obviously cribbing from the best, the best of those in the past.
Cool.
Yeah. You were going to ask something, Ben?
Oh, no, I was just saying, I was reiterating what you were saying, but I forget even what I said.
So. Yeah.
You touched on it, but the gunplay and the action elements always feel like the most undersold things in previews and trailers and stuff.
Right.
They lean hard into the creepy factor. So I'd love to hear more about that and just kind of, when you decide to open fire, what's going on?
Yeah. So the enemies are, like I said, there's more variety to them. I don't want to spoil everything that comes at you, but the most advertised enemies and the ones that you're going to be fighting probably the most, including in some of the like hub, you know, some of the spokes that you go to off of the hub. But in the village, the hub village itself, these lichens, these werewolf type enemies, that are unlike anything that I've really fought in an RE game before. like the closest thing would be like maybe the hunters and some of the like some of the smarter enemies in like RE6 do. They're very mobile. They are smart and they hunt in packs. And they will like lay in wait and ambush you. Like any Resident Evil game, you kind of start out, you know, really conserving your ammo. But eventually you do end up getting access to both crafting, like in RE7, where you can, you know, choose which ammo you want to make with the resources that you end up picking up. Enemies do drop, refills of ammunition and, you know, crafting materials and things like that. And you can also stop at a merchant and buy some stuff. Very similar. I mean, almost exactly like an RE4. Where
is it the same like badass trench coat guy? Because that guy was the true hero.
No, it's a really good character. He's a kind of a creepy guy for how like genial he is and how helpful he seems. And you think, oh, he might actually be, you know, in on this. And he acts a little bit like a quest giver too, like giving you advice. It's this guy called the Duke, who is gigantic. He appears to be like, if he stood up, he would probably be about 12 feet high. And also he is incredibly obese, but that is never made mention to, which is nice. It's not like a fat joke or anything. It's just, this is an otherworldly physique that you have here. But he operates just like the RE4. The RE4 merchant, being able to, you know, you can buy stuff, you can sell treasures, you nice. Can combine treasures and things, and you can also upgrade your weapons as well, just like in RE4.
So how does the game, like, the game's what, set in Transylvania or something?
Yes, it is.
And you're fighting werewolves, like, does the game justify that at all, or...
Oh yeah, there's definitely like hand wavy stuff with you know, because they always have a virus or a parasite that explains everything. That is all explained in the goofy Resident Evil fiction. You know, it's never, you know, they have their explanation for why you haven't seen stuff like this elsewhere.
But like, I guess the previous games, like, the explanations were consistently dumb. But they were fairly, I don't know, believable. Whereas this seems like going like, oh yeah, these just happen to directly correspond to like, you know, pop culture monsters. Like, do they pull that off, or does it come across as just like, oh, just silly?
I would say it definitely rides the line between pulling it off and it just being silly. The explanation that we end up getting is that the mist that we have from this region could have sprung from the natural phenomenon that is being exploited in order to make this into a bioweapon kind of deal. Right.
Sure.
Yeah. But I mean, the actual story is, Capcom decided, hey, wouldn't it be fun to fight werewolves? And it is.
Along those lines, how many things do you uppercut?
You don't really have an awful lot of like melee ability on you. So, I mean, Chris is in the game, but it's not the main character that you play. You're playing as Ethan, the main character from RE7. Kind of the setup is that after the incident in Louisiana, he and his wife had a kid and eventually moved to Europe, moved to Romania to follow Chris, because Chris had said, okay, I'm going to protect you guys to make sure nothing bad happens. However, bad things happen and the kid goes missing and Ethan goes chasing after her. So Ethan is not the heavily trained guy. I mean, like in RE7, he is just a regular dude. I think he's like a systems analyst or something. Just a big fucking nerd. Here he has had a little bit of military training, which helps justify a little bit some of the bigger guns you're able to use. But like your melee capabilities, kind of, you know, are pretty much just, okay, there's a knife you can use if you want to. And also there is the block and parry system, which allows you to either block a good amount of damage that's coming in, or if you block at the correct time, you can do a shove, which will knock somebody away and stun them. So you can do some attacks. You're not getting awful lot of, you know, Chris Redfield uppercuts and wrestling moves. You're not getting a lot of Leon Kennedy suplexes.
So have they gone away from kind of the, you know, like laser pointer, you know, take out the knees based combat?
That's still there. The enemies are still reactive to where you shoot them. In fact, more so than they were when you fought enemies in RE7. Mm-hmm. Because they were those shuffling mold monsters who, you know, they were just kind of gooey, so it didn't really matter if you shot them in the leg or not. Headshots still matter. Shooting enemies in the leg still matters. I would say it is de-emphasized somewhat because the combat is faster than it was in RE4. Not as fast mm-hmm. as RE5 or RE6, but it is still here.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. More questions here. Yeah.
how did you binge it? Was it like a one shot straight through, kind of chop it up into pieces? Were there natural breaking points?
So there are natural breaking points because of that structure, which is weirdly like Dark Souls, where you have like the intro that you do, and then you get the quest. Like, okay, here are these four things that you need to beat in order to get to the end game. There were some natural breaking off points. So like, I went and got it first thing on Friday. We had some recording to do on Friday, so I didn't get to play as much of it as I wanted to, but I did like the intro, and then I did it kind of over I did one chapter the next day, and then like two each on Sunday, and then like during Monday during the day. So yeah, like it went down really, really smooth. It is very well paced. You know, it gives you a lot of incentive to see like what is next around the corner, through, I think, just really good presentation, but also the fact that like I thought I knew more about what was going to happen in this game based on the demos and the marketing materials, but like stuff that you have seen is really just from the first quarter of the game. Like once it got to the point where like everything after this is a mystery, it was like, dang, dude, I need to see what's behind the next door here, because it might be sweet, because the things I've seen before are sweet.
Mm-hmm. I assume if it's broken up into these four lords, the first one is giantess vampire. The next one is little person vampire. then there's like really skinny vampire, and it sounds like you've already found really fat vampire. So we're covering all our bases.
Let's just say it's not as many vampires as you would think based on what you've seen. They end up widening the gamut more.
I think in Transylvania, I think you're like a vampire by birthright. So.
I always feel bad for like making a joke like that, because I know that we like at least at one point had some listeners in Romania, and I don't know how much, right? I don't know how much they owned that, or how much that's like, geez, kind of like a tired thing. It is easy for me. I will say this. It is easy for me to, when talking about these horror tropes and properties that I love, I find myself forgetting that Transylvania is an actual place.
Sure. It's got to be an earned thing. Maybe. It's probably varies by individual.
Yeah.
So with that, I've a friend who's, really passionate about kind of the, I guess the Romani, kind of their experience and, trying to get, people to, not be as stereotypical in their depiction of them, that sort of thing. Does any of that come into the game?
I mean, not that I notice, but I may not have the sensitivities of somebody who has lived that experience to use particular language about that. There is very little that I would associate with, like, I would say, oh yeah, that's playing off of Romani tropes. Like the merchant travels around like in a wagon, but he is not otherwise coded in a way that would like look and feel problematic, mm-hmm. Like looking at the village that is here, like, I would say, oh, this is supposed to take place in 2021. No village that looks like this would or could actually exist outside of, like, I don't know, whatever the Romanian equivalent of, like, Colonial Williamsburg would be. So there is a little bit of, like, your character walks into this very outdated and, you know, one word that you could use, you know, especially early on, you know, this insular culture that is outside, that is afraid of outsiders, or, you know, derisive of outsiders. You could say, like, oh, yeah, this is being portrayed as, like, a backward place. I don't know that that is being done with any particular malice. I think that that is being done to evoke, you know, the fearful villagers that live in the shadow of a giant castle where a Dracula or a Frankenstein factory might be.
Sure.
What you've actually walked into, sorry to ruin the twist, but what you've actually walked into is a Transylvania LARP camp.
Ooh.
And that's the M. Night Shyamalan twist to the game.
It was modern day all along.
So, what is the current state of the timeline in Resident Evil? Like, do they ever have 7 or 8, ever grappled with the fact that, like, what, I think Shanghai gets nuked in at the end of 6, and...
There are some, nods, to that, in some of the imagery that is shown. And also, like, in the first in RE7, you can find a newspaper that mentions the incident in Edonia, which is the European city that gets hit in RE6. That is there, but it is not necessarily, like, dwelled on any more than, like, the Raccoon City incident is mentioned offhandedly. I don't even know if Raccoon City is mentioned in this. I think that the general, like, state of the world is that bioterror and BOWs, biological organism weapons or something like that, are, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, it's weirdly it has been converged with Metal Gear for a while. That continues to be the case, where instead of Metal Gears, you have different amoral companies researching pathogens and also trying to make super soldiers and tyrants and stuff.
When do you think this game's going to get remade?
6 months ago. Oh, I don't know. I mean, to that question, I'm going to segue that into saying this is a gorgeous game. I am playing this on PlayStation 5 on an OLED 4K television with HDR. It's like ideal conditions for it. So of course I would say it looks good, but it's gorgeous. It looks amazing, especially kind of those opening areas in the castle where everything is, like, gilded and fancy and shiny and stuff. It really does look great. And then conversely looks horrifying when you get into some of the more explicitly gross areas as well. So
is there an element of looks good in motion? Like, do they take advantage of the hardware power in terms of, like, having a lot going on at once?
Not more so than before, like, not in a way that, like, necessarily impacts play, you know. It's not like doing physics modeling on a whole bunch of stuff that, like, factors in, but I think that, you know, it's possible that the hardware is making it, you know, easier for them to do interesting, like, enemy behavior, I would say. Because they use, especially when you're out in the village, the enemies use every part of the surface. They're very nimble. They will bound across rooftops and stuff like that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Fighting Spider-Man, it sounds like.
I mean, no, the Spider-Men come later. Yeah, I will not comment as to whether or not there are Spider-Men.
And Spider-Mams.
Can you move a slider to say how realistic the Spider-Men look?
Yeah, if you do it all the way to the bottom, it just looks like Tofu from RE2, just the big cube walking around.
it's the screenshot from Into the Spider-Verse with the Miles Morales in his fake costume next to the real deal Peter Parker. And it's just a slider between the two of those.
Any other questions? I don't know that I have an awful lot to say on top of what I have already said, other than, you know, I remarked on this on Twitter, but this you know, it does what I would like a sequel to do, which is refine and expand. This definitely does feel like they took the kind of more intimate experimental stuff from RE7 and took the stuff that worked from that and brought it kind of back into something that resembles things from across the entire series. This feels very Resident Evil-y to me, if you take the entire series into account.
Greg, as someone who skipped RE7 for this reason, I guess maybe I don't know, but it sounds like it's a little more true to the series.
The original one is very true throughout most of it. It is operating to try and be true to, like, RE1 specifically. This is calling back to and being more of a piece of the rest of it. For you, so, like, if people say, hey, I haven't played Resident Evil 7, like, should I play that one? I would say, yeah, because the game owns. But if you find yourself just like, I'm just really not interested in that, they do have like a, you know, get me up to speed cutscene that you can watch that explains the important plot developments from RE7.
That's cool.
Yeah. Which is just, you know, a nice thing to do. Like, I watched it because, you know, though I've played that game 4 or 5 times now, it is nice to know, because usually the choices that they make in those getting you caught up montages end up telling you what is important, so you can kind of guess what's going to be coming up in the story, which is neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. Resident Evil Village. It's good.
Glad you enjoyed it. Now that you finish it, are there any hooks of like play through and find all the vials, or, you know, are there any replayability concessions being made?
There's some of that. There's definitely, so like they have done what I like, which is what I think the achievement system in games is supposed to be for, which is actually turn to those into in-game challenges that don't just have rewards for your, you know, profile on your system's dashboard, but actually have mm-hmm. like you get a currency that you can use to buy, I mean, everything from like infinite ammo weapons down to like, oh, here's some concept art of this particular character, or like a high res model that you can look at of this character. So you
can
go back
and buy a knife.
What?
I said that's cool that you can buy a knife, an infinite ammo weapon.
Yep. Well, I mean, except if you throw the knife and then it's zero, it's only one ammo.
Ah, damn.
Yeah, infinite ammo versions of your weapons. Yeah. So there is a little bit of that. Like, it gives you a big list of the things. That's something the series has done for a while. I think as far back as RE6, they had that mode as well, or that kind of thing. There's also the Mercenaries mode, which is a longstanding kind of mini game mode, which is like challenge combat courses that you can do with limited ammo and resources. They're timed and scored. And you can use the points that you get from that to buy better weapons, unlock levels to go do better stuff. I messed around with that a little bit. It's never been entirely my cup of tea because I'm not necessarily great at the combat in any iteration of these games. But it's good that it's there, especially after an explicit Mercenaries mode was missing in Resident Evil 7.
Cool.
One thing I forgot to ask about, did you talk about the gun upgrading system? Do they have anything similar to like RE4 here?
Oh, very similar to RE4. Yeah. Okay. Not as many versions of individual guns. I mean, over the course of my playthrough, there were probably 3 or 4 of any of like the class of weapons that you have. So like 3 pistols, 3 shotguns, etc. But what's nice is like at the base level, like, yeah, some of them are upgrades from the others, but the bigger consideration is that, like, oh, this is like a riot shotgun, so it will fire in a wide spray, but in exchange for that, you get a faster rate of fire, and it holds more shells and stuff like that. And then you can upgrade around that as you see fit. It's very similar.
Particularly good for targeting medics.
Jeez. it is quite similar to RE8. I'm not sure, or sorry, to RE4. I'm not sure if it has any of like the like hidden secret stuff where like at full upgrade it unlocks like a different style of firing than you would have before.
Beast mode.
Yeah. But I think that that is stuff that would come like on New Game Plus or anything. I'm sure stuff will get wild as you go through and invest more and keep your upgrades and stuff.
Do they still have a pistol with laughably large ammo capacity? Because that was my favorite thing from RE 4 and 5.
Yeah, the highest ammo capacity that I got, because there are also like weapon upgrades that you can buy and find in the world. It was like a M1911. Standard
1911 bullets.
yeah. nothing wild like RE4 where you could get a pistol that held like 30. I think that with the extended magazine and the like as much as I upgraded it had like 17 in a clip, which is reasonable for a gun of that size.
Actually in real life a fairly low capacity gun.
Yeah, I mean it's a 45 most of the time, which bugged me because it's a you know all of the ammo that you find is 9mm. So like I'm like
that's funny.
Where in the world are people getting a 9mm 1911? So like 17 was like what I had on there. And like you had like sniper rifles, but some of them were coded as assault rifles, like semi-auto. It's not that bad that those have big clips on them as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Any other questions? Going once, going twice.
Sold.
Okay. David, how about you?
Sure. So a couple of things. So as I kind of hinted in the pre-roll, I spent this weekend LARPing, which is, I guess, kind of gaming adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a group based out of Mississippi called Solar. It's like Southern live action role playing something, so basically just once a month they have a weekend long event where people go and camp out and on Saturday, they generally will have a what they call a field battle. So which will be like a 2 to 3 hour long, like extended, live action, role playing combat thing. And then between that, we'll have like, wandering monsters and, people interacting character, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the interesting things with it is, everyone's in costume and generally fairly, extensive costumes. Depending on what species people are playing, it can be anything from, like, playing an orc with, like, green skin and tusks to various elves with pointy ears, stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. People in everything from, pirate style, kind of, naval jackets to like full, chainmail, things like that.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. The other thing is, the location is actually a, 100 acres of woodland that was bought specifically for this.
Oh, so they and can't. Yeah.
I want to go for the Winnie the Pooh cosplay weekend.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. and so, for example, like the group I kind of went with basically embodies the druid faction.
Okay.
So their camp is kind of off in the woods away from everyone else. And like, they're actually in the process of like building a log cabin on the site and stuff like that.
Hmm.
Similarly, the, I don't know what would be normally like a clubhouse, where they have snacks and stuff. It's all done up, you know, like medieval tavern style.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. The other thing is, you know, it's all very everything in character. So, you know, before the main battle on Saturday, you know, Friday night was a lot of, you know, the various kind of dignitaries of the factions going and, you know, negotiating who's going to devote what resources and, you know, what their strategy is going to be, you know, that sort of thing. You know, dealing with tensions between, like, for example, you know, we were with the Druid faction and there's also an undead faction that, you know, we're both, you know, fighting for the same thing, but don't necessarily like each other.
Right, right.
So, so that was a lot of fun. The other thing that's fun is part of it is you have to either volunteer for a couple hours, you know, working in the, you know, the kitchen or playing some of the just random monsters.
Okay.
For people to fight. And so that's fun because it's, the people playing the monsters have a lot of freedom. You know, it can be anything from just like, you know, I'm just going to be like, I don't know. You know, if you're a goblin, it can be anything from just like, yeah, I'm just going to go and like attack people and fight and, you know, that sort of thing. Or it can be like, I'm going to go and be the goblin that like, I didn't even want to do this. I wanted to go to art school, but mom insisted I, you know, become a minion.
Oh.
So, you know, it's, yeah. So, you know, it's very much, you know, you never quite know what you're going to, get.
Yeah.
For example, this weekend, there's a overarching story that's kind of continuously going on, and the kind of the thrust of this weekend was there had been there's a Nippon, which is you know, the game world's kind of equivalent of Japan, had a faction of that had kind of gone against the emperor and basically converted everyone in their, I don't know, domain to zombies.
Okay.
To undead. And so was now invading. So, you know, for the actual field battle, it was fighting a lot of ninjas and then like a lot of like zombie onis and things like that.
Okay.
But then for the just like random, you know, monsters wandering around between things, a lot of it was creatures that were displaced from you know, refugees from the fighting in Nippon.
Okay.
So like a whole bunch of like tanukis running around causing mischief and things like that.
Hmm.
So yeah, so kind of the end result of it is it was just, you know, a really good time. I was really impressed. You know, sometimes with these sorts of things, you can get people just kind of being asshats, you know, competitive, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that would be my worry.
But I was super impressed, you know, like everyone that was involved, it was, you know, like if you're playing as a monster, it was very obvious, like, I'm not out here to like win or to beat people. Like my, you know, everyone who was playing a monster, their first concern was like being entertaining for the people that they're interacting with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like it'll be more fun for everybody. If I think of this as collaborative storytelling and not competitive.
Yeah, right. I mean, exactly.
Effectively that monster is GMing the encounter as well.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, similarly, you know, it seemed like there was a really good kind of balance in terms of there being kind of some, you know, I don't know, kind of Game of Thrones-esque, you know, political intrigue With everyone keeping in mind that it's, you know, just to have fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like we brought a ton of new people, and the faction that's kind of the undead faction, that's the people we came with, rivals, like, definitely really wanted to recruit some people just to kind of razz the other team.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and it was very much, you know, it was people legitimately being helpful, and, you know, also kind of playing at the, you know, sort of, you know, frenemies type thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it calls to mind Venture Brothers, right? Not not to be a one-note guy, because, you know, I talk about Venture Brothers a lot. But like, oh, yeah, you know, you've just, everything works more smoothly when you have that fun rivalry, when you have the Guild of Calamitous Intent and the OSI, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wouldn't have thought of but was really cool was seeing there's a lot of great role playing. You know, people did a great job of, you know, just when they're sitting around, like, what's their you know, what's their motives, you know, how do their characters interact, you know, that sort of thing. Which was great, but what I didn't expect was there's a surprising amount of role-playing with the kind of main large-scale battle.
Okay.
So to give you an idea, there was probably at least 50 people participating in this. And it was a lot of fun seeing people kind of what roles they naturally fell into and kind of how they saw themselves, their kind of role on the battlefield.
Here to be a red shirt. It's okay. It's my thing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And it was like super, it was actually though a thing where it was like, so I had a long spear is what I equipped myself with. And I basically could take between one and two hits, which, considering these are foam weapons, that's literally like someone tapping you with a weapon. Like,
right.
Super easy to kill you. So a lot of it would be like, people who were more warriors, lining up with shields and, you know, blocking the enemies so that I'd either be like poking them over their shoulder, or I played a rogue. So, like, you know, when they got distracted, just kind of, flank around behind them and poke them in the back.
What was the overarching goal? Like, what was each like army or faction attempting to accomplish?
It was actually kind of fun. Our group, we split into a couple of teams. My team, they needed to, their goal was to, untangle the ley line, so that, the like high archmage or whatever could, you know, send, you know, magical power from, I don't know, the Nexus or something, which basically what that meant is, you know, once we accomplished that, they announced like, hey, everyone in the game, whatever spells per day you've used up, like, you now have back.
Oh, nice.
But the way that worked is we get to like the quote circle of power, and they had literally taken a bunch of balls of yarn and tangled them together. And so like several of our casters had to untangle and wind up all the balls of yarn while everyone else protected them.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Similarly, so the way that like spells and alchemist fire and stuff like that works is we're called spell packets, basically little cloth packets filled with bird seed.
Okay.
And so one of the groups, halfway through, they're like, all right, we found some ships. The GM says, we found some ships in the dock. So what we're going to do is, some of you are going to dash over there and you're going to make these packets as quickly as possible, and that's representing, you know, stuffing the wadding and filling up the gunpowder and stuff like that. And then another group's going to be, you know, chucking them into the enemy line to kind of thin them out.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, the whole thing was just silly. For me, it was kind of funny because my group, halfway through, like, almost all of our fighters got kind of redirected to another battlefield. And so it was just, like, a bunch of squishy people trying to hold the line. but luckily, one of the people that was there was the head of basically the healing faction.
Okay. And
so it was just like he literally could just resurrect, like, I don't know, 25 times per day.
Oh, wow.
So it was just like us getting slaughtered and him resurrecting us. Which, you know, was just kind of funny.
So I'm curious, with all your weapons training, did that factor in at all, or do they kind of iron anything that relates to your actual skill with the weapon out?
So that was one of my main concerns, because in particular, you're not allowed hitting to the head or hands, and you basically are just allowed tapping someone. So it's not particularly realistic. That's one of the reasons I went with a spear, is because, you know, with a spear, you're generally aiming center of mass anyways.
And it's a light poke.
Exactly.
They don't have like a mace or anything like that that required a whole bunch of finesse to try and tap somebody with it.
A couple of people. You know, it's still, you know, it's still, you know, you can have like a, I don't know, like a 8 foot long, you know, longsword or whatever, but it's still kind of foam and PVC, so it's still pretty light. I think my favorite thing actually is the fighter class can get super strength, which at the low levels, that's just like, hey, if someone gets downed on the battlefield, you can drag them at full speed, like back to your healers. But at higher levels, it's literally like I would be fighting and you know, get downed, and they would literally like throw me like 40 feet back to the healers. And so it's just like, you know, in effect, I'm invulnerable while walking back to get healed.
That's cool. I didn't realize that they had like a D&D mechanic underpinning all this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So there's, different classes and different stats. You know, it's a lot of like, there's a specific, you know, phrase you have to say for each of the spells. So, you know, I don't know, by the plane of fire, I call down, you know, flames upon you or something. So it's super, super dorky, but a lot of fun.
Does anyone like track this stuff, or is it very like kind of easygoing, where it's like, yeah, he can cast fire, I'll just jump down right now or something?
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, it's mostly on the honor system. I mean, you do have, you basically get your, at the beginning of the weekend, you get your spells per day that are kind of cards. And so, like, when there's a law in the combat, you just, like, tear in half the cards for the spells you've cast. So it's one of those things where, like, yeah, if you wanted to, it probably wouldn't be hard to cheat. But at the same time, there is, you know, mechanics and some record keeping, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. And also, do you want to be a person who cheats at LARP? Like, what are you getting out of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even saying that to, like, you know, cast aspersions on LARP. This actually sounds really fun. But more just kind of like, it's kind of like cheating at pickup basketball. Like, what in the world are you gaining? Like, just, this sucks. This is bad.
You've traveled 3 hours out into the woods with this group of people that is very, like, I'm sure everyone knows everyone and is all very well connected. So I'm sure you want to ruin all the goodwill for that weekend.
Right. Exactly.
I'm sure there are people who try to do it, but, like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like the kind of behavior that has like an intrinsic reward to it. I think that it'd be more rewarding to continue, you know, like continue the shared fiction and like help keep the community together you know, yeah, by
exactly
by making sure everybody has a good time, right?
It seems like a similarity to D&D where it's like you have to be careful about who you're playing with, because it's like, I agree, most people should be like that and be like fun to play with and stuff. But then it's like if you get a bad person or something, like yeah. I played D&D at a convention one time and it's like it only takes a couple of bad people to really like ruin the experience for everyone. Mm. So, that wasn't the case here. So that's good.
Yeah, I was super impressed. And I would say even more than that, like, I was really impressed. You know, there is like the faction that like you can be like, you know, some like accursed evil fey who's like, you know, like healing spells damage you and damage spells heal you, and you're mm-hmm. you know, you're super edgelordy. But like everyone I saw, it like played that, but kind of as camp, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. It was like, yeah, we're going to play this and be like super edgelords, but because it's fun, not because like, I know, we're taking it too seriously.
Yeah, I'm not actually doing this to ruin anybody's day. This is just the role that I feel like playing, and there's a space right, for that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a lot of fun. Oh, my other favorite thing is one of the like things that's written in the lore is like, oh yeah, you know, these weekends, they're like, I forget what they call them, they're like the gathering that happens, you know, every month, and for some strange, crazy magic, like, you know, all the halflings and, like, fairies and stuff like that, you know, for some reason, like, grow up to be like normal people size. So like one of the players was literally a 6'5" halfling.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
Oh, that had to be fun, yeah. Oh my god, and the number of times a day they eat, that's that is a lot of a lot of halfling to keep fed there.
Yep.
Oh man. Yeah. This sounds very fun and very wholesome. I am also picturing just cresting the hill, just a whole bunch of good old boys and like jeeps and dune buggies just coming down.
It's also funny because like there are some dynamic of that.
Okay.
And to me, in some ways, that made it kind of more fun.
Okay.
Because you know, it's I know, like, yeah, it, you know, it definitely, you know, takes place in Mississippi.
Yeah.
But so, you know, is kind of that sort of culture some, but again, just like the other things, it seemed like people who, you know, had a good, you know, good sense of perspective on that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was just picturing them like just cresting the hill and just like sweeping the entire field, like, woo, yeah. Like just chasing you guys off. I like just general miscreants.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually probably.
I don't want that to happen. Let me make it very clear, that would be a suboptimal turn of events for everybody involved. Also, just it was a funny image that popped into my head.
Oh, so. No, I totally agree. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Sounds badass. Do you think you're going to do it again?
I'm definitely hoping to. Yeah, definitely planning on it.
Is it once a year?
Once a month.
Oh damn!
Yeah, that's
so,
like just enough.
Yeah,
I don't know
if I'll do it quite that often, but yeah, it's you definitely can.
Yeah, that's just enough. Where by the time you go and do the one session, you've got to start preparing for the next one.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, like especially the people who like live closer there, like you know, there's one guy who's literally you know constructing like a primitive house at the site, so like it's you know one of those things where you can do as much or as little with it as you want, kind of.
Yeah,
I just imagine they you know they talk about working on the cabin at their normal job all the time to people and just you know left out the context, and one time they're like, oh yeah, a whole bunch of fairies got in and messed everything up, switched around all the spices, so I gotta reorganize that. Yeah. Wait, what
did you say? So? Yeah.
I know what I said.
Oh geez. Huh. Well, that's cool. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any video games, or has that been consumed you?
Yeah, I'm probably gonna go quick because, you know, kind of been talking for a bit, but they added Second Extinction to Game Pass on PC. So okay. I don't know if any of you've seen this. It's basically a 3-player kind of Left 4 Dead like, although a little bit more open world. And kind of the plot line is that for some reason, dinosaurs suddenly return to Earth, apparently by burrowing out of the ground.
That's right. I was a dinosaur.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I guess that's where we find fossils.
Maybe yeah.
The asteroid never got them. They just burrowed.
Exactly. And now, like, some of them have crazy elemental powers because, I don't know, none of this is meant to make sense. But so humanity now, like, lives on a space station, and you're part of a group that, like, drop ships in to, you know, fight dinosaurs to retake the Earth. It's early access. It's kind of my take out right now. It's a very solid, very playable game. It's very silly and kind of dumb action-y.
Okay.
But I think it's going to be a fun game. Like I think it's going to be a good balance of, you know, being kind of a Left 4 Dead with a little bit more of like a Warhammer or not Warhammer, Warframe or, you know, Destiny or something like that, kind of you know, games as a service, open world type thing.
Yeah.
You know, you can play as various classes which each have you know, different abilities that you can do. A lot of the larger enemies, which right now are ankylosaurs, which are like those armored ones with club tails, T-Rexes, and Triceratops.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those really emphasize they'll be like armored in most of their body and then have a weak point. And so you either need to like maneuver to exploit that or like hit them with an explosive to flip them over, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm emphasizing it's teamwork.
Cow tipping like on another level.
Exactly. probably my favorite thing is the characterization is just a lot of fun. Probably my favorite character is a African lady who her special ability is like a healing ability, which is explained and presented in game as her just like encouraging the other players.
Well, kind of like a bard. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's straight up like you press the button and she's like, look at us. Who would have thought? Not yeah. me. Like just like, oh, you guys know I love you all. You know that, right? Like, it's just super wholesome in a very silly way.
The healing powers of good vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's like that. There's you know, sniper dude, stuff like that. So like just I'm hoping it seems like they're going for a very good balance of just stupid dumb action but without necessarily being a dumb game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, yeah, I recommend it. I'm not sure there's a lot more to say about that, but yeah, good stuff.
I feel like I got a feel of it, especially looking at the screenshots. Yeah, Second mm-hmm. Extinction. Yeah, but
who's getting extinct?
Ooh.
Humans or the dinosaurs? Yeah.
Dum dum dum.
Let's see here, Ben. What about you?
I don't got much, but I got one. I played another multiplayer game this week. I played a game called Unrailed, which I don't know if we've talked about on the show or not.
I don't recognize it.
All right, so I've
a purple
seen it
link.
Played
It's a purple link, so it means that I have at least looked at it once. It may have come up, but I think you may have it may have been like a like in a list of like, oh, I've like given this a couple of, you know, I gave this a few minutes but don't have a lot to say about it.
Yeah. So this is a multiplayer game. You play with friends, or you can play by yourself if you want. One of the coolest things about it is the menu is just on the ground that you're, like, walking on. Hmm. And so you can just, like, walk over the settings and set everything. And it's just, like, very clever. And then, like, the tutorial is great. It's like you learn how to do everything in, like, 2 minutes or less. But the game itself is a multiplayer game. There's a couple different modes for how you can play, but the basic premise is... there is a train at a starting point. It is going to another station. There is not a track to get it there. And so you need to go through and build a track to get the train from point A to point B. And the way that you do that is you have this procedurally generated map that has trees, rocks, and water, and mountains. So there's four hazard types. Mountains you cannot get around in any way, at least at the beginning of the game. So you have to chop trees, dig through the mountain, and build bridges over the water in order to get the train across, and then build tracks for the train to get across. On top of this, the train itself has like a water tank that heats up that you need to cool down. Or I guess it's just the engine that you need to cool down with water. And so the idea is it's kind of like an overcooked situation where you have like three or four different people. They're all kind of doing their own thing, but you need to like talk with one another and kind of coordinate what you have to do to make everything kind of stay together. On top of that, there's like a really cool kind of upgrade system within it. So like that's like your basic run is getting from point A to point B. But as you're doing this through the level, there's like collectibles that might be off the beaten path that you have to maybe try and build some bridges to get. I think it's like a bolt, like a bolt that goes in a railroad track or something like that. But that's like the economy for upgrades. Mm-hmm. If you collect like three or four of them, you can upgrade any of your cars or you can buy new cars to add on. And so there's like three tiers of upgrades. One is just upgrade a car that you already have that costs a certain amount. The second one is you can buy a new car, but your train is like limited by size based on the engine. So you can only have like three cars at the beginning of the game. But if you upgrade your engine once, you can have four, then five and so on. And then the third thing you can buy is you can buy a new engine, which is pricey, but it will, you can add more cars and then it'll take you to a new biome, which basically ups the difficulty of the game.
Gotcha.
So like there's different biomes, like there's like snow where you have to like walk across it to clear the snow before you can build a track. There's like a hell lava type biome eventually that makes it very tough because you can't build bridges in lava. Sad.
As you don't do.
Yeah. but in general, the game's like really fun. It's a lot of fun to like coordinate with people. It plays up to four players. So I played it once like last week with just two people, but playing it with four was a lot more fun. People can basically have more designated roles at that point where it's like, okay, I'm picking up this axe. I'm going to clear every mountain mound in the way between here and there. And then, you know, someone else will do the same thing with trees, and then some other people might be dedicated to building tracks and like collecting resources, that sort of thing. So yeah, I don't know how much more to say about it because it's a pretty simple game and I've pretty much described everything you can do with it.
But what was this called again?
It's called Unrailed. It was part of like a bundle last week that also had Witchit in it, which was one of the games that I played last week. But
you failed to pronounce that correctly.
Witchit.
There is a bang at the end, and I expect you to emphasize it.
Both Witchit and Unrailed have exclamation point on it.
Very enthusiastic games.
However, the makers of these games are not as good as the auteur Darren Aronofsky, so I will pronounce Mother, but I will not pronounce these games in the same way.
The tricky part with Mother is you also have to make it clear that the M at the front is lowercase.
That's the tough part. That's the pro move.
Yeah, so you have to make it clear you're not calling to a specific mother.
Yeah.
You're calling just to Mother Nature.
You're invoking the symbolic concept of Mother.
This game is fun. We should play it sometime.
Is there anything kind of stopping you you know, from making like a really inefficient, like, does it penalize you if your kind of track is like zigzagging all over the place? Like, is it grading you on like economizing materials, or is it just whatever keeps this thing rolling?
No, in fact, like sometimes you need to do that if you need to buy time, because the train is moving at a constant speed and you cannot stop it.
Does it speed up over the course of a run?
It only speeds up if you build a track to the next train station, then it like fast forwards for you goes there pretty instantly. But sometimes that sucks because you might want to collect a bunch of resources. There's like a hack where if you collect a bunch of resources and move it to the station that you end at the start of the next run or whatever, you'll have all those resources. So like there's like this max minning where it's like, all right, everyone like collect all the resources you can get and put it here at the end. There's also an achievement system where there will be like a goal or like a task to do every round, where it's like every person cut down one tree or something like that, or like let your train be on fire for 10 seconds. So it's like, so if you
complete that's not that, union.
Yeah. So if you complete that, you get like
complete the insurance fraud.
Yeah. So if you complete that, you get like an extra spike that you can use to like buy all these resources and stuff. But yeah, that's about it. But it's enjoyable to play. It's like D&D. If you get a good group of friends, it can be a lot of fun. So
nice.
Yeah.
It's a good idea for a game.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, did you say is the currency railroad spikes?
I believe so. It's like that, or like screws or something. It looks, yeah. Some piece of something that you could find at Lowe's, probably.
Nice. Is that all you had, Ben?
That is all I had.
Cool. Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, some fun stuff came onto my docket this week. With the advent of Mother's Day, I hope you all called your mothers. One of Jen's gifts was new Pokemon Snap.
Oh, dang.
So cool. I've joined you in that pantheon, and we played some of that on Mother's Day.
It's cute,
isn't it? That is a really relaxing, fun little game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one insight I have to add to it is just how much extra you can spot when you are not the one at the controls.
Yes. you end up getting tunnel vision. Yeah.
Yeah. We kind of knew this from playing Minecraft Dungeons, and like Luke and Milo, if they're watching us play, are always the first ones to spot treasure chests or, you know, little side areas, that sort of thing. But yeah, with Jen going through the area and just trying to get the Butterfree or, you know, whatever, we're like, that's over there. That's over there. This is over there. There's a lot of shouting, underlying this relaxing little game. So it's been a blast. We haven't played too much. We haven't gotten out of the first area yet. We've just gone through it a couple times. But that's kind of how the game is designed. Yeah. And I'm sure I'll have more to say about that later.
It's made for short runs.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't even introduced the whatever the fruits are that you can throw at the animals.
Yeah. Which they make a very strong point to say these are much lighter than apples, but just as tasty. So when you just are beaning Pokemon left and right with these apples, it's not like hucking Granny Smiths at a Caterpie, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, in the previous game, they straight up gave you like pesticide bars to throw at them.
Yep.
We've evolved a lot in what has it been, 20 years, 14 years?
Yeah, 20 years, give or take.
Good Gotta Lord. Round up them all.
I jumped a little further in Subnautica, another game that I'm playing with the boys. And without spoiling anything, although Ben, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, our rescue ship arrived.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting moment to have the kids witness.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yay. Oh, no. We'll unpack that in therapy later. Let's go after some more fishies, kids.
Blood for blood. But it's effective, right? Like it's a big narrative moment in like a very small amount of time, and like without having to do much.
And with a very large amount of body count.
Yeah. From a meta standpoint, just suspected like that it can't be this easy, or like this is going to introduce some complication, not some solution. Mm-hmm. Which certainly it delivered on that. So continuing to play away, I've started finding pieces for the Cyclops, I think it is.
Yeah.
The first like, sub. So progressing on that equipment tree.
So I'm a big proponent. The game starts when you get the Cyclops.
Yeah, well, that's what I understand. So I'm still splashing around in the shallows.
Are you building a base yet?
I am not. I think I've built the habitat builder, or maybe I haven't. I need to make a bunch more wiring kits. But I've talked about before just how bad the like recipe pinning system, for lack of a better term, is in the game. So I think I've either built the habitat builder but not messed around with it just because I was, you know, getting propelled towards other stuff. Or that was one of the things that I like had the materials but used a wiring kit on something else, and now I need another wiring kit.
I want to watch you play this game. But I'm also going to be sick and at a virtual bachelor party this weekend, so I cannot do that.
Well, I'm sure there will be other opportunities. And then the final thing that I jumped into in VR, no less, was Astrobot Rescue Mission.
Oh, dang. Yeah, so that was they gave that away with the Play, right?
Yeah, the Play Inside or whatever. They gave away a lot of VR stuff.
Moss and
Res
Thumper.
Res Infinite, yeah. Which is... Oh, say again?
They have the Moss, Thumper, Res Infinite. Yeah.
Yep. And I put a little bit of time into Res Infinite, and that game is just inscrutable. Like, not fun. Don't understand what's going on. That might show up later in the episode for our multiplayer question, but I digress. Astrobot Rescue Mission is absolutely adorable. Mm-hmm. And will make you very, very aware of how little you can actually turn around in your chair. I literally, instead of sitting on my big, you know, sink into it couch, I got a stool from the dining area and sat in that just for the express purpose of being able to easily stand up and like physically turn myself around to see areas of the level
and just like pivot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I would have told you like, oh yeah, I can just look over my shoulder. Like, how big a deal is that? And it's like, no, that's really uncomfortable to do in a traditional match. Like, and especially, repeated times, mm-hmm. or for an extended period of time.
Yeah. You're controlling it like a regular 3D platformer, but you're looking at it like the levels of diorama. Is mm-hmm, that correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they do a Mario 64 style character as the camera. So you're like a big mommy bot, I guess, that kind of wanders behind the child running through the level as they round up all their siblings. Mm-hmm. And so it's got that kind of justification, but you really just kind of meander along behind the avatar that you're controlling. It is kind of annoying. Another parallel with early Mario games is once you've moved forwards, you will not back up, even if you run your character further back in the level. And so for some levels where you kind of go back through and want to make sure you find all the secrets, that gets really frustrating because you kind of want to be looking at things from behind, but you got to go past them first. And then, you know, if you realize there was something you missed, you're either restarting the level or trying to play that section from a really weird angle, which it might be designed for and it might totally not, which can be annoying. But overall, like the personality of the game and the fun factor of it is really great. I finished the first world, and something that I really appreciate is that in these kind of platforming games, usually you've got like a series of levels around a theme, like, oh, these are all the ice levels or the desert levels. It feels like each level I've hit so far is a biome unto itself. Like they really, really went very diverse in the kind of thing. So one's a mushroom cave and one's a high-rise girders under construction. And, you know, it varies that much. I'll be interested to see as we keep on going through worlds, if it stays like every level is completely its own thing. Because it's really neat to see all the assets that they've made for it and just how, you know, it all hangs together stylistically because you got these cute little robots running around it. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of creativity, especially as you get to, you know, each level has some kind of set piece or, you know, big character towards the end, not necessarily a boss, but just, you know, a giant cactus at the end of the canyon level that pops up to hand you your ending platform and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Just really fun and creative. Nice. I would also be lying if I didn't say I lost an extra 15 to 20 minutes after I was done playing, going to your little home base and buying a bunch of trinkets. And just looking at those in VR. So you get a little, you talked about the levels being a diorama. You get a little mini diorama or mini model statue of just something inspired from that level.
Oh, nice.
From a little vending machine. And you just, yeah, just, you know, twist it around, rotate it, look at it, move it in 3D. And there's just that unto itself is very intriguing.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about it, and you have added onto that. I need to get my I mailed out for the adapter that will make the PSVR work with the PS5.
I need to do that preemptively. Did you need to prove that you had a PS5?
No, I didn't actually. All I needed to do was enter the serial number from the like box, like the little converter box that you have. And it arrived much sooner than I expected to. It only took like 2 weeks or so. Getting by on my TV is kind of a pain in the ass, and I just haven't done it. So
that's understandable. I've heard that. Were you playing on a Pro before for PS4 VR?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I've heard that the horsepower of the PS5 is a noticeable jump in quality.
Cool.
And I know it will be for me because I've got a PS4 basic. I don't know how big the jump is for a Pro, but
yeah,
I've heard people just raving about that as well. So you think you know PSVR, but wait till you try it on PS5. Yeah.
I feel weird. Like 5 years ago, I was like, VR, now I have two VR headsets. It's nuts.
It'll never work. I'm obsessed with it.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question we ask the nice people?
Yeah, and this question was inspired by Aaron, so thank you so much for hitting us up on Facebook. You know, sometimes the whole is not greater than the sum of its parts. Sometimes there is a part that is greater than the whole. So what is a game where you like the aesthetics or music or other kind of ancillary element way better than the game itself?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, there's a lot of games I could answer this question for the Dark Souls games. Those come to mind for sure. But I'll reach into the more obscure and select Predator for the NES. This is one of the few games that a small company called Pack-In Video developed, and it was published by Acclaim. There's a lot of the game to like. The story is pretty faithful to the movie, the controls handle well, and the music to the game is awesome. Seriously, it's one of my favorite NES soundtracks. Sad to say, the gameplay sucks. It's too hard, tedious to play, and boring to go through. With a better company, it could have been a very good game. Probably another case of a rush development cycle to tie into a movie where the developer did the best they could in the time constraints. Yeah, we did this for an episode of Abject Suffering. It's not good, which sucks because a Predator game should be amazing.
But they came out with a new one recently, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the Friday the 13th people. Apparently it wasn't very good.
The streak continues.
Yeah.
How did you mess that up?
I was going to say, people said that about the Friday the 13th game, but I absolutely love that.
Yeah. I heard more good things. The people that I heard saying bad things about the Predator game had good things to say about the Friday the 13th game.
Yeah, I guess to be fair, I just didn't hear anybody talk about Predator game except for a few people saying it's bad. So it's probably real bad in that case.
Since it just kind of landed with a thud. It didn't really make that much of an impact. That team's going to get a second chance though because they're working on an Evil Dead game that's kind of a similar asymmetrical multiplayer kind of deal.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things. It's just very hard to get right.
Yeah. Let's see here. David, what does Callum say?
Callum says Extinction from 2018. I like the idea of being a small, agile dude taking on massive things Attack on Titan style. Them being giant orcs also appealed. Pity it was awful to play. Good thing it was only $5 on sale.
I have no idea what this game is.
Extinction is literally an Attack on Titan ripoff.
Oh.
It is
asymmetrical multiplayer as well, right?
I'm not sure about that, but like its plotline and like overall thing was definitely a ripoff, except, orcs and stuff.
Okay.
My understanding, I don't think... I'm not meaning that to say like it was shovelware or anything.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think you're thinking of, because so I got this confused with Evolve.
Evolve.
Yeah, yeah.
There it is. Okay, yep.
No. Okay. Huh. Oh, and I just did a search, and my search pulled up a bunch of stuff for Second Extinction. So,
hey, there you go.
Synergy.
Play that.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says, boy, do I love the character designs and implied personalities of the heroes in Overwatch. Boy, do I hate playing in a storyless time vampire like Overwatch.
It's one of those things like that. That is a game where like, oh yeah, I can take or leave the play, but like, I'm probably going to get the most enjoyment out of doing a TV Tropes or a wiki dive on this, where I can appreciate the work that was put into the characters and just read short little stories about them and then go about my day.
Yeah. That's
Overwatch really just needs to be either like a TV show or something.
Yeah.
Comic.
Yep.
Look, if you don't get hardcore into the lore, you really can't understand the meaning behind Justice Reigns from Above.
Whether or not it is high noon. He says that any time of day. It's really confusing. Hey, how do you guys like my 6-year-old Overwatch jokes?
Yeah.
Let's see here.
It's outdated, but the game's still being played. So.
True enough.
It's fine.
Dennis, what does Gwen say?
Gwen says Sunset Overdrive. I haven't thought about that name in forever.
Yeah?
Sunset Overdrive has the worst script imaginable, but the soundtrack rips.
Yeah. That's a cool aesthetic too.
Really fun like overall aesthetic and character models and stuff.
Yeah.
Just that was their thing at the time, because they were coming out right around when Ubisoft was like, girls are too hard to animate.
No.
And so Sunset was like, we'll have everything in the game.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Do that.
Yeah. Jack says, and I'll jump on this grenade, so if anybody is a Guppy fan, just don't attribute this to Jack. picture me saying this. Jack says, the Binding of Isaac truly is an aesthetic marvel. Clearly the best thing about the game is the perfect art style and visuals, while the gameplay tends to be shallow and basic. 5 stars.
Yeah, that's one I wouldn't consider, but that is definitely a game I want to play but can't get over the scatological humor.
Yeah. It's pretty juvenile. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does David say? I didn't do that on purpose.
I swear you planned that every
liar. Yeah.
We just have a lot of Davids who comment. Like, they're pretty good odds that one, you know, it's 25%.
Yeah. So David said, I recently played a 2D action game called Balfaris with an awesome sci-fi action movie aesthetic with great pixel art and music, but the actual gameplay felt like something was missing and I had to put it down.
I have never heard of Balfaris.
Yeah, there was some other discussion that happened on the Slack. Apparently wide consensus that there are awesome, that either the game entirely is awesome or there are awesome elements to the game.
Ooh, I love this visual style. Extremely colorful. It looks like a neon Contra. Huh.
Ooh.
Yeah. Neat. I learned about something new. Too bad that the gameplay is missing something.
Also, didn't Contra look like a neon Contra?
it goes through phases, honestly. Yeah, this is a much more neon Contra than even the most neon of Contras that I've seen.
We need this Contra to be at least 10% more neon.
Ben, if you want to split this one up and pass it off, I will let you. But what does Julia say?
Julia, well, it's funny because this is actually half of my answer, so something will be split. Julia says Celeste music.
Yeah, the music in Celeste is really good.
Agreed.
Yeah, and Dennis, round us out with Rookie. Sorry, I about said Rookie's answer.
I should probably refresh the page so I see Rookie's answer.
Hmm.
That'd be good. There we are. Rookie says, a boy in his blob has such a great concept and some really creative transformations for the blob. The game could and should be amazing. It's a shame that the game plays sluggishly and nothing is signposted. The concept is so strong, it's still somehow remembered fondly.
Yeah. I mean... it's remembered fondly in some regards, but I think that generally no conversation about it is complete. I mean, people usually talk about how inscrutable it is, like just that it is one of the most poorly explained games that has an awful lot actually to it. But, you know, it's just gonna, it kind of takes trial and error, life and death trial and error to figure out what does what. And I never played like the Wii update to it to know if it actually addressed those problems. The only thing I know about the Wii version of A Boy and His Blob is that it has a button that lets you hug your blob.
Aw.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
So I know we have Can You Pet the Dog? Is there Can You Hug the Blob?
I mean, it'd be a pretty simple Twitter with just one post, but yeah.
I feel like Can You Pet the Dog expands to cover all sorts of potential pets.
Mm. So you're saying blobs are dogs?
I'm saying most dogs are at least part blob. So if you think of the Venn diagram, that's three blobs.
I believe it.
Yeah, you left me behind there. I'll do mine. I can generally put forward, like, I like the game, but, like, the only thing about it... Okay, so I like Chrono Cross. I can mount a firmly felt but let's say unconvincing defense of its systems, its characters, its story, you know, like that. But the one thing that I do enjoy, and sometimes I think, oh, maybe I just say I like this game because of the soundtrack, is the soundtrack. Like, the music in Chrono Cross is one of the best soundtracks in any video game. And it rises so far above, and so, you know, it rises so far above because it is the one aspect of the game that I think is unassailably great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So take that answer and replace it with FTL. And that's my answer. The second half of my answer.
Oh, really? Okay.
I like, don't get me wrong, I like the gameplay of FTL, but like the music is so good in that game, in my opinion. And
yeah.
So
yeah.
And it's the same thing with like Celeste too. Celeste is, I think, more so of the answer where it's like, I could take or leave the gameplay there. It's fine. And like the story's fine, but like the music's really, really good.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same thing. Night in the Woods. I like the story of Night in the Woods and the characters and the visual style too. It's just the play of Night in the Woods I don't like, but the music is one of those things of like, yeah, we can all agree that the music in this is extremely good.
I don't remember there being any play in Night in the Woods.
That's walking around and talking to people. That's about it. let's see. David, how about you?
So I think the thing for me, I would say, isn't so much like a part of the whole so much as it is a part that forgot the whole.
Okay.
I think that EVE Online would be an amazing like crafting and economy system for a game. They just never actually added a game.
Right. things to do, goal, you know, goal oriented play, intrinsic goal oriented play. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, my answer is more on the aesthetic side. I love the look and just overall idea behind Psychonauts.
Mm.
But for whatever reason, I just bounced off the actual gameplay of that really hard.
The actual gameplay is not very good.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I will go to bat for you on that one. It is
cool. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a, you know, average 3D platformer.
And I think I came to it late enough that I had seen enough games do platforming right, or enough better examples,
yeah,
that it made it that much harder to accept the shortcomings that it has on that front. But I mean, I love the look of that game. Yeah. Every single bit of it is dripping with personality.
Yeah. No, good one. I think people can sign up. People will want to subscribe to your newsletter.
Excellent.
Yeah. Cool. So thank you very much, everybody, for participating in this. Thank you, Dennis, for putting it up. Thank you, Aaron, for suggesting a question that inspired this one. If you would like to participate in this in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. I'm excited about this. One of my favorite games from the Super Nintendo is getting a port, is getting a release on modern systems, including PC, PS4, Switch, and Xbox One. Zombies Ate My Neighbors is a game that I have just a lot of experience with. Played it a ton, specifically with my dad and my uncle and my brother.
You guys did this for WoF, didn't
we? Did extremely early on. I think it was like episode 6 of WoF. I mean, that's how important it is. Like, you know, like the earliest days of like WoF, it was like I made sure we got Myst on there, and I made sure we got Zombies Ate My Neighbors. that's how important it is to me. This is a top-down shooter where you play as one of two kids. Like, it can be a two-player game. That's the most fun way to play it, where you're going around and rescuing your neighbors from like a smattering of like suburban areas and malls. There are levels based on like, you know, gothic castles and stuff like that, and you're rescuing them from like zombies and werewolves and all of these enemies that are pulled from, you know, late night monster movie kind of things. Super fun, super, super quirky. It's one of the rare like non-adventure games made by LucasArts, and also a rare LucasArts game that is not like based on a previously existing franchise, let's say. I mean, their adventure games were oftentimes original, but their action games were oftentimes based on other stuff. Just a great game that I am really excited that more people are going to be able to play. It's coming out on June 29th, along with its sequel, which is not as good because a different developer handled it, Ghoul Patrol. It's being put out, I think, by Limited Run Games is helping to publish that. So rock on. I'm really excited. There's even going to be a physical edition for limited runs. I may end up buying that to put next. And this is a port of the SNES version, not the worst Genesis version. It's worth saying because the Genesis version is real bad.
I see that they're adding a quick save system.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some other ancillary stuff, but it seems like they're kind of not touching the game that much apart from that one big addition. Yeah,
that's kind of de rigueur, so, putting in a quick save system or a rewind. Usually that happens. Yeah.
So with the addition of a quick save system, was this like a Nintendo hard game?
It's a pretty hard game. Honestly, it is. especially when you get past like, I think there are like 100 levels in it. If you get past like level 30 or something, it's real tough. Yeah. Quick saves will be welcome.
Very cool.
Yeah. I saw that today and I was like, yes, anytime I can think of Zombies at My Neighbors is a good, happy time. Dennis, why are people talking about Waluigi?
Why are you having these feelings towards Waluigi all of a sudden?
I admire him as a person who does great works, but why is he bubbling back up?
I mean, the honest answer is I don't know, and that's part of what makes it so fun. Like, Waluigi has always been the internet darling.
Yeah.
Poor left out kid. That's actually awesome. What I think the impressive thing about this story is that Nintendo seems to be really playing into that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple of pieces of Waluigi art released. One was for Mario Golf, which has him in a dapper fedora and vest, just looking awesome. Mm-hmm. And I would say his kind of the same brand of maniacal that we've seen him in art before.
Yeah.
But the thing that really lit the internet on fire was a quick render of Waluigi that popped up as like a screensaver, essentially like a placeholder screen on a Nintendo show.
Yeah.
That is him. I don't even know how to describe this. I think I have to pull from America's Next Top Model. It is Waluigi booty tooching for his life.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anime knees together pose and just working it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Licking a rose too.
Yeah. With the cute profile and rose thing going on.
Yeah.
So this you know, it's fairly recent, and I'm sure the fan art waves are coming like they weren't there before.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is the most self-aware from Nintendo Waluigi image that I have seen in a long time, and I am here for it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Is this going to segue into the SNL skit?
I won't talk that up. Just there through, I even forget how it started.
Can we talk probably, it down?
Yeah.
I can't watch it. It's too awkward. I can't look at him.
Cringe, and it's the second most rich person on the planet, and it, yeah. It's like, it's just awkward.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, they put him in a room with a Luigi boner, and I'm okay with that.
I don't know. I'd rather just focus on Waluigi and this coming up as part of a new Mario Sports game that's coming out pretty soon.
Yeah,
not to steer us, but there's always a rolling boil, a simmering of Waluigi. Like, I mean, what is the exact middle point between sincere and ironic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like simmering is the correct verb for all things Waluigi.
Yeah,
I would describe this image as scintillating. I don't know.
This is the first time that I've seen people get explicitly horny for him, which
you
is
don't
not
do internet enough.
Which is not. I mean, which is kind of surprising. Maybe it's just because I'm looking at this post and it has a whole bunch of memes put together where people are calling attention to the booty popping that is going on.
Better not awaken anything in me.
Oh man.
I'll tell you this, yeah. I'm calling it right now. Like this level of awareness coming from Nintendo, to my mind, guarantees that there is a Waluigi game on the way.
Waluigi and Smash are bust. All the love for Waluigi doesn't matter if he's not put in a Smash game.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but I'm talking like own standalone game is coming.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Waluigi and Smash.
When's the last time they made a good Wario game?
It's been a minute. Yeah.
GameCube.
Yeah.
GameCube WarioWare.
I don't mean WarioWare. I mean actual like platformer Wario.
Yeah,
Game Boy territory.
Yeah, yeah, like I think the Game Boy Advance one is the last one that I've heard like good things about. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see like either a Waluigi version of that or like the evil version of the Mario and Luigi RPG.
Oh yeah. Sure, that'd be fun. Oh yeah, get Treehouse to do the localization on that. That'd be good. Yeah. No, you cracked it.
So expect that within the year. I guarantee it.
Speaking,
you can call Cole and complain if it doesn't happen.
speaking of RPGs, what's going on with Yakuza, Ben?
Yeah, I thought I'd bring this up since I've been playing the game recently. They announced today that they're doing two different paths for the Yakuza games for the combat systems. So I didn't know this, but they have a game called Judgment, which they released previously, which is like a Yakuza spinoff. I'm new to this universe, so I didn't know any of this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But they mentioned that the Judgment games are going to keep the previous combat system of the games, everything that was before Yakuza Like a Dragon.
Yeah, and the beat 'em up style.
Yeah, and then the subsequent sequels of like Yakuza Like a Dragon and that series is going to continue refining the turn-based combat system that they have.
This isn't terribly surprising. It's good that they are investing in building up the other world, especially because the Yakuza series has so many entries in it now. It is probably pretty intimidating, you know, so like having this mechanical differentiator makes sense to me.
It's interesting for me to just find out the backstory of this, because since I'm coming to Like a Dragon as my first entry in the series, like everything's fresh, and so it's weird to not see this as the normal thing.
You never knew anything different.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And David, what you got?
So this is pretty just kind of a stupid thing, but it entertained me. In the new Pokemon Snap, apparently there's a little caterpillar thing called a Wurmple.
Yeah, it's like the Caterpie replacement from a couple generations after Caterpie.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess at some point you can get it to kind of roll over on its back and you know, kind of roll around for you. And someone took a picture of that just presents it as just this caterpillar like lying on its back, staring like 1,000-yard stare up into the sky.
Yeah.
And so it has become kind of the current meme, you know, expressing our current world and people's reaction to it.
I mean, there is always just like a through line of depression memes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this worm piece... Is it Wurmple or Wurmpy? Wurmple. Just kind of like laying out flat, you know, catatonic, like Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, is hashtag relatable. I it sounds like I'm being derisive of this, but like some of the memes are pretty funny. I shared one in the Discord before I saw that you posted the story elsewhere in the list of stuff that we look at. It's a hand-drawn fan art of Wurmple laying there, and that does, it's four panels, and the middle two panels are like zoom ins, and then at the closest zoom in it's black and white, and there's like a helicopter superimposed over it, so it's like he's having a Nom flashback.
Oh yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, yes. But the 1,000-yard stare is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, meme heavy week.
It really has been.
Yeah.
Also, PSA, if you're listening to this on day of release, Subnautica just came out today, so you should go play that.
Below Zero.
Ben, will your travel interfere with your ability to sequester yourself for Below Zero?
So it comes out Friday. I'm going to definitely play it on the weekend. I'm getting my vaccine on Saturday, so I'm planning on just feeling shitty all day Sunday and playing that game.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's worse plans.
Yeah.
Neat.
I want to watch you play that game.
Yeah, there's worse plans, like not getting your vaccine.
Yeah. So today is my emergence day. I am fully vaxxed, which is good.
What happens if you see your shadow when you go outside?
It means I'm never going to go outside again, which is how it was going to be anyway, because this past year has been traumatic. My immune system is now fully up, has received the firmware update, but the pinball, barcade kind of place I would go, it's only up on Thursdays and weekends now. So I would need to go later on in the week. So I planned on having something to report from that, but oh well. Yeah.
Womp womp.
Womp womp. How do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I about said tuning in, but it's not 1962. Level number 371. You know what to do to help us out. Patreon.com/DuckFeedTV, Facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. Tell your friends, talk about us on Twitter or social media. And most of all, tune in next week would be the big one. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Don't think.
Wait,
so
what's the big one next week?
What?
What's
there's no big one. I mean, it'll be episode 372 next week. I don't have any plans, but the big one is, you know, always coming back.
Yeah, you don't understand the significance of 372.
I am honestly trying to think of one.
No, I just said the big one. If you're listening this week, we want you to stick around, you know.
Yeah, come hang.
Yeah. I'm not forgetting to pet my cat because Greta is like right on my lap, which is fun.
Aww.
Yeah. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch me stream on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Instagram at Deck of Wonders.
I'm David Brysmith.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. We'll be right back. let's see here. I've got one. It's one that I said, which is lame, but a big gyre of molars. Talking about the tooth fairy thing. And the tooth, yeah, island out in the middle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got what? Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, I've got just one as well. I wrote down the most neon of Contras.
Okay. David?
I had a couple. As promised, I had it's the PS5 that's the problem. I had most dogs or at least part blob. And meme heavy week.
Okay.
We're all over the place this week.
Yeah, what you got, Ben?
I just had one. I had Resident Evil-y, and I spelled it with capital I's on either side of the L so that you could make it like Resident Evil 8 if you wanted to.
Are there any umlauts?
Nah.
Wait. Evil?
I'll
it's a Resident Evil-y game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has the quality of being Resident Evil.
Yeah. The ones that got
autocorrect no, I think is it was not happy with my spelling.
Yeah. Evil. Okay. The ones that got laughs were it's the PS5 that's the problem and a big gyre of molars.
I like having gyre in one of our titles.
Yeah,
Gyre and Gimbal in the Wave.
Yeah.
We have been a gyreless podcast up until this point.
I know. It's taken a long time to get the word gyre in. Yeah.
But at least we got it before 372, which is the point at which it becomes legally impossible to use gyre on the podcast.
Right. Our silence has been deafening up to this point. Mm-hmm. Re-gyres.
I'm just waiting for episode 420.
Oh, yeah.
So just you're gonna blaze up, dude.
Come on, just completely blitzed on edibles. My problem when I get high is that I can't find words, which is a problem when you do a podcast and words are your currency. Yeah,
my problem is I had panic attacks and feel paranoid. So
awful.
Weed does not work with me.
Not a good feeling. No,
that's why you gotta stick to cocaine.
Yep.
Oh.
It's like coffee plus. No, don't do cocaine. I don't do cocaine. That sounds terrible.
Oh, God, awful. Expensive habit, too. Jeesh.
Yeah.
No, really no upside.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to go.
Yeah, have a good night, guys.
Yeah, take care, everybody.
Peace, y'all.
Yeah, safe travels, Ben. Good luck with your backs.
Yeah, and then Cole, it takes two next Monday?
Yeah, let's give it a shot.
All right, thumbs up. Have a good week, guys.
Later.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye. Later.